Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 256 in the series. This session of the radio show shares the Board of Health meeting held April 27, 2020, via virtual conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. The show notes provide links to the agenda, my notes taken during the meeting, and the resulting emergency order, which was approved during the meeting and then published the next day. The recording runs about 55 minutes, so let's listen to the Board of Health meeting held April 27.
Allows public bodies to meet entirely remotely, so as long as reasonable public access is afforded so that the public can follow along with the deliberations of this meeting. Ensuring public access does not ensure public participation unless such participation is required by law. This meeting will feature public comment. For this meeting, the Franklin Board of Health is convening by telephone video conference via the Zoom application as posted on the town's website identifying how the public may join. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and that some attendees are participating by video conference. Accordingly, please be aware that other folks may be able to see you and take care not to screen share your computer. Anything that you broadcast may be captured by the recording. All supporting materials that have been provided to the members of this body are available on the town's website unless otherwise noted. The public is encouraged to follow along using the posted agenda unless noted otherwise. Meeting business ground rules. We are now turning to the first item on the agenda. Before we do so, permit me to cover some ground rules for effective and clear conduct of our business and to ensure accurate meeting minutes. I, the chair, will introduce each speaker on the agenda. After they conclude their remarks, the chair will go down the line of members, inviting each by name to provide any additional comment, question, or motion. Please hold until your name is called. Further, please remember to mute your phone or computer when you're not speaking, and please remember to speak clearly in a way that helps generate accurate meeting minutes. For any response, please wait until the chair yields the floor to you and state your name before speaking. If members wish to engage in colloquy with other members, please do so through the chair, taking care to identify yourself. For items with public comment, after members have spoken, the chair will afford public comment as follows. The chair will first ask members of the public who wish to speak to identify their names and addresses only. Once the chair has a list of all public commentators, I will call on each by name and afford 3 minutes for any comments. Finally, each vote taken in this meeting will be conducted by a roll call vote. Okay, so can call the meeting to order.
Okay, before we go on, can I just go over the chat and raise your hand?
Sure thing.
Thanks. All right, so tonight we'll be using chat and raise your hand features for residents to comment during the meeting. To chat, just hover your mouse over the bottom of the screen, click on the chat icon, and a chat screen should pop up. If you want to comment, please type your name and address, and then the host will allow 3 minutes for you to speak. To raise your hand, hover your mouse over the bottom of the screen, a raise hand icon should pop up. Click on the icon and the host will be notified that your hand is raised and the host will give you 3 minutes to speak. Thank you, Bridget.
Thank you, Kathleen. So our first order of business is a discussion pertaining to individuals wearing a cloth covering the nose and mouth in essential businesses. Prior to the board reviewing and discussing, I'd like to get some feedback from our health director as to what she's hearing in other communities.
Oh, thank you.
Hold on, Kathleen. Kelly, can you please mute yourself?
Okay.
Thank you. So we still have additional background noise. Can whoever else that may be please mute themselves? Kathleen, can you mute all?
Will that mute you too?
It's okay. You can unmute me when the time comes.
Okay.
I think we're good.
Think so?
I think so. Go ahead.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm just going to ask you just to hold 1 second. I have 3 more people I have to admit.
Sure.
Okay. All right. To the board, to the chair, I have been kind of researching this topic all day. And actually, Bridget, you have all the information I sent you. So there's several towns, Arlington, Boston, Somerville, Plainfield, Plainville, I'm sorry, and several other towns and cities that have either a local order, a mandate, an ordinance for the residents of the town to wear cloth face covering to cover their nose and mouth in a community setting. So there's several different mandates. So the one that I prefer actually, so I'll just kind of go over the main ones. So Worcester's order requires customers and employees shopping at essential businesses to cover their nose and mouth, along with essential retail services, grocery stores, pharmacies, convenience stores, home improvement stores. Hamilton, all members of the public entering grocery stores must have a cloth-based covering. Holyoke as well, and Plainville, actually Bridget, you have, I don't have my Word document open. Plainville is the one I like the best because it requires employees who cannot distance themselves for 6 feet away from another employee. So in other words, you know, people who are stocking or who are in produce, you know, stocking produce, that they are mandated to wear a face mask. And it's more of a board advisory, a strong advisory that any customer entering a business, an essential business, must wear a face mask, or otherwise known as cloth face covering. So I like that, Bridget. I don't know if you want me to comment on the reason why I like that.
I would appreciate it. I know why, but I want to make sure that everyone else knows why as well.
Sure. So through the weeks, I have received a lot of complaints from people who enter grocery stores and are very upset that there are stalkers that are shoulder to shoulder. There's no face mask. There's no social distancing. And there's been a real concern about that aspect. And from what I gather, a lot of the grocery stores are not mandating the employees to wear these face masks. So, and they are working 8-hour shifts, 6-hour shifts. So they're together a lot. And if they can't social distance by that 6 feet, then I really think that a mask should be worn. The other reason why I like the advisory, and the Attorney General's office has sent the documents to the municipality saying, giving us guidance, a guidance document, giving us guidance on many things, but one of them is the advisory from a municipality. Board of Health is an extremely strong and powerful advisory. So if we have the essential businesses have a posting that there is a strong advisory that any customer entering the essential business must wear a cloth face covering. So, and Bridget, the reason I don't believe it should be mandated is that there are handicapped people who may have a difficult time putting on a face mask, and I don't think that the people who are disabled or have a difficult time for whatever reason should be basically discriminated against because they cannot put a face mask on, therefore they cannot enter a store if we do an absolute mandate. And so that's why I like the advisory from the Board of Health. And anyhow, so that's my recommendation as the health director, and from all of the complaints that I've been fielding and all of the messages that I've been receiving, I think that that's a layer of protection, two layers of protection that we can really move forward with. To the chair.
Okay, thank you. So based on my previous experience and in the field for a long time, I tend to agree with you that by mandating everyone wear a face covering out in public will decrease the importance of social distancing. If everyone is wearing a face mask, we may see some crowding. I do like the way, and much like you, Kathleen, I've spent some time researching our surrounding towns as to what has been required or strongly recommended, and I do favor and lean towards the Plainville's current language. And again, with the new guidance that came out just this afternoon from the Attorney General's office, the question explicitly defined was, can a municipality require people to wear face coverings in public? Yes, a municipality through its Board of Health can use all possible care to prevent the spread of infection. However, the municipality must consider adopting appropriate exemptions for those persons for whom a mask may pose an increased health concern. As an alternative, a municipality may also encourage people to wear face coverings in public on an advisory basis. So I would like to propose, and obviously we'll open it up to discussion with our fellow, my fellow board members, that we start the process with mandating in the essential businesses so that all employees of essential businesses shall wear a face covering over their mouth and nose when interacting with the public and within 6 feet of a coworker. And then also mandate that all essential businesses post on their main entrances that it's highly recommended that the consumer entering the store wear a face covering. I think if we start with that measure, we'll see an increased compliance. And then if we are still getting a lot of concerns from residents, we can obviously revisit this and mandate all. But I think it's kind of harsh right now where there are people who may not be able to either obtain a face covering or may not be able to safely put a face covering on. And I think that as we craft this and make this a local matter, we need to be really cautious and make sure that we're specifying a face covering, not a face mask. We want to ensure that our surgical face masks are for our medical employees, that our N95s and our KN95s are for our frontline, you know, our first responders and things like that. We don't want the public sort of mass purchasing these types of face coverings that are really only designed to control your asymptomatic spread. So with that, I would like to send it over to Vice Chair Tim.
Thank you, Bridget. Thank you, Kathleen. Before any comment, I do have a question, Kathleen, regarding the scope of enforceability for an advisory, what the responsibility of the board is to ensure that the respective essential businesses are following the requirements set out in the advisory and set out in the mandate.
Well, I have to say, I actually just wrote that down because it is a problem. So, you know, obviously some towns and cities are actually ticketing. Okay, so there's actual a violation. There's a fee to be paid. But again, who's doing the enforcing? And I actually don't recommend doing that. So the enforcement is basically just having trust in the businesses that we're asking for them to do this. But I will tell you this, that Stop and Shop has, so I live in the city of Worcester. The city of Worcester has mandated that everyone has to wear, employees and customers have to wear a face mask, and Stop and Shop has a very large sign saying that they will not refuse a customer to enter without a face mask. Now, how will they deal with an employee? Because we're just giving an advisory, but how they deal with an employee is going to be strictly internal. There can't be any enforcement on our part other than a call to an establishment if we get a complaint. And okay. I wouldn't ask police to do that either, Tim.
No, I appreciate that. Topic on the agenda, one of my concerns was what type of resources is it going to require for the town to enforce some of the more restrictive mandates that we're seeing in some of the other towns. And, you know, obviously the police department and the fire department have more than enough to keep them busy, and ensuring that we're not over-exhausting those types of resources. If there is a way to limit the scope, I think the comments that you've made about the concerns that you have are valid and reasonable and appreciated. So
thank you.
I don't have any other comment or question.
Okay. Thank you. I will send it over to Jeff.
My reasoning was the same as Tim's about how that was going to be enforced. And I can't see police going around giving out tickets and stuff. People aren't to be wearing them. I agree. I've been to a lot of places around, and you see some of these stores. You walk in, and nobody's wearing masks. I think it's a a great idea to the next way to start. I think it's the way to go.
Okay. I know that this is definitely something that the public is interested in. So before we make any type of motion or a vote, I can go ahead and open it up to public comment. If you're interested in commenting, please raise your hand or enter your name and address into the chat box and I will identify you.
Bridget, I'm still not seeing the hand raising, so maybe just.
Oh, well, we have people using the chat box for now, so that's fine. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Helen, go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Helen Chalk. Yeah, I just wanted to comment that there's such a lack of mask wearing, and you know we know that even the alleged six foot rule is frankly inadequate. It doesn't protect people from aerosolized droplets if people are talking, walking, you know, never mind doing anything with more exertion. So, well, I appreciate it's very difficult to enforce some sort of ticketing system and fines. I think a lot more can be done just to publicize. This is the advice of the Commonwealth. This is the advice of Charlie Baker. This is the advice of CDC. You know, can more be done to spread the word? No matter when anybody leaves their house, frankly, they should be wearing a face covering. So what could the town do to support the getting the word out piece in general?
Kathleen, can we use social media? Can update the town portal to use social media. And part of the requirement will also be for businesses that are essential to post that strong recommendation on their front door. So we're hopeful that these small changes this week we'll really start to show more information and more support in that area. But Helen, this is really just the first step. We want to be really cautious and not have a heavy mandate where, again, there are some people who may not be able to wear a mask safely. So you want to really recognize the broader audience first. And if we're finding that it's not effective enough, we can always reconvene within the week, you know, in the next week and make it a little bit more heavy-handed, if you will.
Yeah, and I appreciate not everybody has access to a mask, but again, to publicize the fact that a face covering can be many things. So if it's more of a helping hand saying, if you can't provide one, let's get a group of people that can provide all and sundry options.
Excellent. And again, the FDA did just come out with this really nice infographic that speaks to the differences of masks and when the masks or face coverings can be used. So I think once we start circulating, it just came out this afternoon. So once we start circulating that out around, I think we'll see a little bit more compliance as well. But I appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Marcy, I don't know how to say your last name. I don't want to butcher it. So Marcy, go ahead.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Sorry. Just out of curiosity, after you sort of broadly announce these suggestions, how would you measure the compliance rate and when and how would you determine whether or not a more narrow approach needs to be taken?
So the suggestions are going to be for the public. The employees, it's going to be a mandate. So just want to make sure that's defined as well. And I think we'll hear, I mean, I live in town, so I'll be able to kind of to gauge it as well. But we have been getting a lot of feedback from residents. So I'm going to assume that will continue to occur. And I know that, you know, as we ask our other, you know, the other board members and, you know, Ginny, we can all keep our eye out and we'll try to see, kind of gauge it that way. There's obviously no great metric that's going to work in that regard, but I know we'll continue to hear some concerns and complaints and we'll gauge it that way to begin with. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I just didn't know if it was going to be based on sort of anecdotal feedback or if there was going to be some sort of townwide survey of sorts. I just didn't know what the protocol was in general.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Dashi.
Oh, Dasha. Yes. Hi. It's Dasha.
Dasha. Dasha. I was close. Come on.
Yes, thank you. So I obviously want to lead with what the most intentful situation would be to give people some level of ease. And as time goes on, you know, I'm getting more and more concerned for people's mental health well-being. And one of the most reoccurring things that I'm noticing within the community is definitely the fear of the unknown. And some of that said, since we are kind of living in a box type mindset, just with everything changing and new environments are just happening overnight, And we're forced in a way to like adjust to it. At what point do we kind of determine what the effects are, even of, you know, something as simple as yes, mandating masks, but even noticing people wearing masks and what that does psychologically to us over some time. And I guess, how long are we willing to kind of go? And even with children and all of the things that they're emotionally going through right now, what kind of effect does that have, even like removing smiles or facial expressions with the joyness, you know, of like a child, even in an adult, but you know, like that, I guess as some time goes on, starts to raise some deeper levels of concern in what I'm currently noticing and pattern wise, I guess, from a mental standpoint.
I do not have the answers for that.
That's okay.
I'm going to be completely honest. I don't know. And I know that as we sort of extend the social distancing, and I totally understand that, you know, who can see a smile behind a mask? It's definitely a challenge. I know that there have been some additional resources that came out this afternoon as far as a mental health standpoint. So I'll make sure I forward them over to our director so she can post them. But I think these are all conversations that we need to continue to have. It's definitely stressful. I mean, I have four kids. I get it. They're confused. You know, there's definitely a lot. There's a lot happening. It's very, the unknown is scary. Hopefully after this week, we'll have a little bit more information with this advanced contact tracing and kind of figuring out where we're looking as far as slowing the spread. We'll have more information. And I know that, you know, our town administration will support us getting some, you know, good resources out and really trying to change the narrative from being, you know, this is scary to, you know, we can get through this. We're all in this together type deal.
Is there a way, cause I would love to help, start to like maybe raise some levels of mental health, even like if there was an opportunity to survey people, if they were interested in participating and maybe where some difficulties they might be having emotionally, to try to in some way be like proactive at strengthening immune system or mindset wise while you go.
Bridget, if I may.
Kathleen, I was just going to call on you, my friend.
So, Dashi, this is Kathleen. I'm the health director. I think I have an idea, but if we could discuss offline, would you email me or leave me a voice message with your phone number? I can call you.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I do have an idea.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right, I'm going to go down. Helen, you have another comment?
Yeah, and I think the points raised are very important, but it's really a bundle of information that has to be shared, because my concern is nothing has fundamentally changed really from the middle of March and now with regard to there's no vaccinations available. There's no strong data telling us these are the treatments, everybody's good to go and we can keep everyone off a ventilator. Nothing has fundamentally changed. And I worry that the public at large who aren't, you know, consuming all of the data about risk and treatments, they may have a false sense of security with towns starting to say, okay, back to work, life is good. Right. Nothing has changed. And it would just be a question of postponing the bad outcomes that we were worried about, you know, several weeks ago. So I think along with sending a message about mask wearing, social distancing, yes, mental health risks too, the people have to understand that this is a sort of a staged response. And until we have vaccines, until we have data behind various treatment options for different patient populations, we are no better. So the mental health is a concern, but I think it will be more troublesome if more people throw caution to the wind and everybody rushes back to semi-normal life. So a mask is a small, small way we can all take a big step to actually help get everybody back to work and stay back at work and school.
Thank you, Helen. Ariel? Ariel Doggett?
Yep, I was trying to unmute myself.
Oh, you're fine. No worries. We get it.
My concern with an advisory is basically there's no ramifications for people who still choose not to wear a face covering. I completely understand the concern for people with disabilities, but an advisory really opens the door for people to choose to ignore safety precautions, which there seems to be a lot of varying degrees of, you know, belief of what's safe and what's not safe. So I'm just concerned about that. And also to Dashi, as she had brought up a point of people being afraid to go out because not seeing smiles and all of that, which I totally understand. my son is very high risk. He's afraid to go outside now because people are not wearing masks. And then I am too, because I'm his caretaker and I absolutely cannot get this because he's so high risk. So it's not really fair to him if you flip that other way around. If people don't wear masks, he's stuck inside. So just something to consider.
No, absolutely. And we have considered this, or I have, I know Kathleen has, but again, the challenge remains to that enforcement piece. Right. So we're hoping that by starting with, you know, essential employees have to, the general public is highly recommended, we can sort of slow that down. And again, if it's not being adhered to, we can absolutely revisit. And the other component has been that we are seeing, with that additional signage at the door, people have been sort of turning around in other towns that I've supported and have sort of, you know, made that decision to either come back or pull, you know, get a turtleneck or have, you know, they have something else in their vehicle. And then as Kathleen sort of made reference to, Stop and Shop came flat out and said, listen, if someone doesn't have a mask, we're going to approach them. We're going to tell them to expedite their shopping and make sure they're in and out, but we can't turn these people away because we're still an essential service. And that's been in, you know, that's a statewide mandate from Stop and Shop, and that's within the 34 towns that already have, whether it's an advisory and or mandate. So if you think about it, by the time we get, you know, someone from the Board of Health or the Health Department get there, that person would already be gone. And we're also putting those employees at a, you know, in a harmful situation in case someone did retaliate. So we're really trying to be a little bit more incremental. And look at it from, you know, the strong recommendation and what we can, and we have seen that some stores have created their own, you know, you must, as, you know, as a private business, which is great. But we really want to kind of be mindful. And I totally understand where you're coming from with your son. And, you know, I'm sorry that he's, you know, afraid to go outside. But the other piece I'd like us to sort of consider as well is that social distancing is the key in making sure that people are aware that a contact is, you know, is that exposure within 6 feet for up to 10 to 15 minutes at a time. So passing by someone, you're not really likely to become ill. So just really making sure that the information is shared. Shared appropriately. But we definitely will take your comments into consideration. And I think, Kathleen, maybe it will be helpful for us to go ahead and schedule a meeting next week, next Wednesday, just to kind of revisit, you know, where we're at with these recommendations and some other things that came through today that we haven't been able to put on the agenda.
Okay.
Thank you. So with that being said, Jeff or Tim, are there any motions that you would like to put forth?
Thank you, Bridget. With the comments being taken into consideration.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jeff, hold on. Someone from an iPhone, I don't know who you are, just has a comment. Can you give us your name, please?
Can you?
I'm sorry, we can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, my name is Deb Bartlett. Okay. I work in healthcare in this town. I'm a resident of this town. And if you're going to really recommend for people to wear face masks and or mandate that the employees and the businesses wear face masks and encourage social distancing, what are you going to do about social distancing in these stores? Because I've been in stores, and I'm not talking about grocery stores necessarily, where there's too many people and there is no way to keep 6 feet apart. So if you're not going to tell those people they need to wear a mask, but you're going to allow them to not social distance, I don't understand.
Well, we're not allowing people to social distance, but we're not aware of these things until they're brought up to our attention. We can't be everywhere at once. But what we can do is make sure that an additional advisory goes out. The challenge is that supermarkets were mandated to have 40% occupancy load. CVS has sort of adopted that as well, but not some of our smaller stores didn't meet that same mandate. So what we can do is send out additional information as far as social distancing, having them put down, you know, the tape on the ground and doing some case counts as well. We can definitely look into that and send more information out, but we're not aware unless, you know, we're told. So if you want to give us those explicit businesses, but we can do a blanket sort of announcement to all, you know, all businesses in town, reminding them of the social distancing, what that looks like, how you can promote it within your facility, and then posting a sign, if X amount of people, please wait outside.
Well, that would be optimal, but I still feel that you should be mandating masks, because I've seen too many, this was just in the past week, that there's too many people, they're too close together, they're not wearing masks, the employees look scared to be doing their job, and they work in healthcare, and this is so serious that I don't think we can keep waiting another week and another week to look at this. This is not the time for that. This is the time to be serious right now. That's just my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you. If you're not on the health department staff or on the Board of Health, can you please mute your mic? All right, thank you. All right, Tim, back to you.
Thank you, and thank you everyone for your comments. With comments being taken in the recommendation of the health director, I would make a motion to adopt a mandate for all employees of essential businesses to wear face coverings over their mouths and nose when interacting with the public and when within 6 feet of a coworker, and that all essential businesses post at their main entrances that they highly recommend consumers entering the store wear a face covering.
Second that motion.
Okay, so roll call vote. Let me just pull up my directions here as to how to do that remotely. Sorry, guys.
I believe I can do that, Bridget.
Okay.
I mean, it's literally just okay.
Yep. So I will go ahead. Tim Cochran, your vote?
Vote in favor.
Jeff Harris?
In favor.
Bridget Sweet, in favor. So all in favor. The other thing we did not notate here, just as a point, is we didn't put a time when this should be in effect.
Probably 30. I would say renew in 30 days or revisit.
No, I mean, as far as that this should be effective date.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. So Tim, do you want to revisit?
Well, how about immediately?
Well, I've heard there have been, based on my research, there have been a number of towns that have given 3 days from the time that these mandates and advisories have been enacted before they go into effect. I don't know if that's something that, Kathleen, if you've seen, in order to give not only the public time to receive the information and understand the information, but also to give the businesses time to advise their employees of what the new requirements are.
I think that's reasonable. I haven't seen what anyone else has done, but, you know, we're our own board, and I think that's very reasonable.
And that being said, move that these advisories and mandates take effect within 3 business days of this order.
All right, so the chair, I'm just thinking, today's Monday. How about, is the end of day tomorrow, or I would say no later than the end of day Wednesday, because that will give us Thursday and Friday to get everything out on social media, make phone calls. Is that okay?
So by close of business, April 29th, 2020.
Okay, thank you.
All right, can you go ahead and reread the motion, Tim?
Yes. The motion is that all employees of all essential businesses wear a face covering over their mouth and nose when interacting with the public and within 6 feet of a coworker. That all essential businesses shall post on their main entrance doors that it is highly recommended that the consumers entering the store wear a face covering. That this order come into effect on April. By close of business on April 29th, 2020.
Is there a second?
I second a motion.
All right, so roll call vote, Tim Cochran?
In favor.
Jeff Harris?
In favor.
Bridget Sweet, in favor. All right, thank you. So our next order of business that we wanted to discuss this evening is the possibility of allowing restaurants to sell pantry items and or grocery items that they may have in surplus. Kathleen, I'd like to, can you kind of give some background here as to where we were going with this sort of decision?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
So what started in Arlington was a food establishment started selling grocery items you know, toilet paper, flour, eggs, milk, those type of items. And immediately they were shut down because they're not permitted for that type of retail sale. The director in Arlington started to rethink, you know, this possibility of the food establishments gaining more revenue and also, more importantly, reduce the number of trips outside the home. So if we're going to get a takeout lunch or dinner, we could pick up, you know, a dozen of eggs and flour or toilet paper right at this food establishment. And so what they did was they actually agreed for a temporary change of operations. And that kind of domino effect when kind of snowballed went into Boston, who also allows food establishments to deliver retail food, you know, retail food, pantry items to deliver, pick up at the curbside, takeout. They have a great application process that requires health and safety operation plan to ensure the safety of the workers and the groceries they intend to sell. There's a few other towns that also are doing it. I personally like Boston the best. They also checked with Gus Brown, our building commissioner, to discuss, you know, zoning problems. So if they're not zoned for this type of business, they, as a rule, wouldn't be able to have this type of business. But he agreed to temporarily waive the zoning. If there's a zoning issue, he would temporarily waive it. And we would renew if any food establishment wanted to do this, we would renew their
application. Hold on, Kathy. Excuse me, can you please mute your mic? 508-298-9156 and 774-571-0827. Can you please mute your mics?
Thank you. So the building commissioner absolutely said he would, if there was a zoning issue, he would waive it, and we would, you know, renew the permit every 30 days, which I think is appropriate for this pandemic. So that's kind of the gist of it.
I think it's a good opportunity for local businesses to get rid of product they may not be able to turn around fast enough because of the decline and some of the curbside takeaway carryout, and also an opportunity. You know, people have been hoarding at the supermarket level. So I know when I go food shopping for a family of six, there's not always what I need. So I would be happy to, you know, reduce my trips there and kind of support the local restaurant community. So that's really where the onus came from. So I think it's, and again, as long as the restaurant reached out to Kathleen and Ginny and had some operational parameters to ensure food safety, I think it's a win-win. Again, we don't know. It hasn't happened yet. I'd like to open the floor to Tim for any comments.
Kathleen, do you have an idea of what type of plan you're looking for from the establishments in order to ensure that they're, you know, following necessary and appropriate safety concerns?
Right. Yeah. So basically a standard operating procedure. So if, you know, if a customer is entering the food establishment, we want to make sure that they're social distancing. But more importantly, the items that they're planning on carrying and how they're going to store it. So they would still have to be in compliance with our food code, the FDA food code, you know, for items to be 6 inches off the floor and stored, you know, and, you know, however. So I would basically just kind of want, you know, a plan that I'm not going to babysit them. They're going to have to tell me, and then I can revise it, rework it, and educate them on, you know, the most proper way to go and the proper items to sell.
And then I guess the next question I have is what kind of efforts can we make to notify the public that this is something that's going into effect? Because one thing that's obviously clear, and Bridget mentioned this during the last item, was that hearing from the, get feedback from the public is what makes it, is what makes us capable of doing our jobs and making change. Right. So what can we do to make sure that everyone's going to know if these changes were to go into effect, how could we notify people?
So, well, first of all, we would have to permit them. So I would imagine the food establishment would, you know, basically do the advertising for themselves. But we also have our social media person here that would get it on, you know, Facebook, Twitter, you know, whatever social media is out there. We're pretty limited as far as, you know, getting the word out. But I think we could do the best that we can. And once one food establishment finds out, it would definitely, you know, there'll definitely be a domino effect, I'm sure, especially if they need more revenue.
So I think that we could also leverage our community stakeholders and our community partners. So in the most recent sort of roundtable meeting we had, the Franklin Downtown Partnership had a really comprehensive resource of the restaurants that were open in the area, what their hours were. So I think as long as we make this available in public, I think people will learn of it. And I think that, again, it's just a matter of making sure the proper paperwork has been filed and that they're following the food code, which they're supposed to be doing anyway, and just following up in that regard. But I think utilizing some of our community stakeholders and our partners, people will share that. Again, you know, Franklin Matters, Steve Sherlock is a great advocate and he posts everything on his website. So everyone sees that. So once this sort of becomes available, I think we'll see a domino effect. And again, the intent here is to increase that business for our local restaurants, because we know this is a trying time, and as long as they're doing it safely, we want to promote these sort of outside the box initiatives as best we can. Jeff, any comments?
I agree, it's a great idea. So, and my question was answered already. I was going to ask you guys about permitting and stuff, and you guys pretty much answered that. So that's it.
So Kathleen and I had talked when this sort of like came across our radar, and we know that, you know, Arlington did decide to have a permit fee. We don't think that's appropriate. We're trying to support our local businesses, not create an additional burden on them. So again, as long as they can fill out this, you know, sort of unique application process, go through their SOP, and Kathleen's signed off on it, or Ginny signed off on it, we'd like to see this happen as soon as possible. And I want to applaud Kathleen and Ginny's efforts for reaching out to, you know, zoning and making sure that these decisions were made, you know, ahead of time. So I'd like to go ahead and open up to the public if they have any comments, questions, or concerns as to allowing restaurants to carry or to serve as sort of a mini grocery store. Go ahead.
Hi. I absolutely love that idea. I mean, if the more that we can support small businesses, I fully support that. Over the past like couple of years have definitely struggled to attain information, especially for those that choose to stay off of social media platforms. Is there, when you say an application for the town, I'm looking at it as like an actual town application that someone would like download onto their phone that would keep everything updated. Is that what you mean by the Franklin application? Because if not, I'm like, how do we do that?
No, that would just be, so for the restaurant that was applying to have this additional sort of carry out service, they would have to apply. There'd be no additional onus on the residents who wanted to support those local businesses.
Okay.
So it would just be a literal physical application. What they would do is sort of showcase what their items were, what they were planning to sell, how they could do it safely, packaging maybe, criteria, maybe ingredient information, just again to make sure that final product reaches your hands safely.
Okay. I'm wondering if there is a way, you know, to kind of collaborate, because social media is awesome. Then there's people that choose not to do it but still want the information. If there was a way to create like a town app that could be like the most updated resource to receive and attain information. Because I totally think like feedback from the public is by far one of the biggest helpful aspects.
Bridget, if I may.
Absolutely, sure. Chief Kathleen.
Yeah, we have a COVID-19 portal on the Franklin website where there's about 9 or 12 buttons. Each a different resource for, you know, different businesses and community-wide. So we would put that on the portal as well under resources for the community and businesses.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Is there any other public comment?
Bridget or Kathleen could make up some kind of a checklist or a format for these people that are going to apply for these permits so they know exactly what they need to have done in their places before they get permitted.
So to Kathleen, I think Kathleen found some information from the city of Boston that she liked. Mm-hmm. I did reach out to some of our neighboring towns because I'm no longer a local health agent. I haven't heard back yet, so I'm going to put it back on Kathleen. But yes, I think that there is a way for us to create, even Kathleen, even if it's like a temporary food event permit application where it says how they'll keep things hot or cold, mm-hmm. there are some resources out there that we can absolutely sort of pull together, or Kathleen can absolutely pull together and make it available. We don't want these restaurants, again, to have additional work. The goal is to make this an additional sort of opportunity for them. So we'll definitely have something between Ginny, Kathleen, and I. I'm sure we can pull something together that's easy to fill out, intuitive, but also making sure that all those food safety criteria are met. And that's really the bottom line, is just making sure that that food safety piece is still met, because we always want to ensure and promote public health. Kathleen, your turn.
Well, Jeff, were you also asking how the facility is similar to what Tim asked? Like how the facility is going to run this?
No, I was just suggesting that you get together with Bridget and come up with some kind of a form for the permit. So they know exactly what they have and have not to do, you know, to get the permit.
Yeah, I think we could revise our temporary food permit. Because I usually ask for a list of items as well. And again, like what Bridget was saying, how to keep, you know, where do you store them? How do you keep it cold? How do you keep it hot? And I can definitely reformat that to mirror what the food establishments may be doing.
I was just thinking that would be confusing for somebody who wants to do this, that mm-hmm. what do I have to have done before I'll get this permit? So they know exactly what they have to have.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And I definitely will do that.
I had one question. A little different from what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. As a person who has gone into people's homes for emergencies, I'm a plumber, obviously. And what are we doing about people going into residential homes? Are we going to ask them to be having to wear masks to go into their homes, or is that going to be just left up to them? Or
that's a good question, Bridget. You want to grab that, or you want me to?
My opinion would be yes, they should be wearing a mask. They should be protecting themselves at all costs. If you're an essential employee and those services are considered essential and you're working with the public, mm-hmm. as we defined in that parameter, then yes, you should be wearing a face covering and or a mask. I know that there are some there's some guidance from I forget what state agency, for like contractors and construction workers. I think, you know, people in that field can sort of modify those recommendations based as is. I'm not sure if Gus has any particular requirements locally, Kathleen, but I know some towns have created sort of a checklist as to if this, then that. So ensuring that there's nobody else in the home when they're doing that service visit, or ensuring that there's only one other person in the room to go ahead and maintain that 6 foot of separation. But I would say that as an essential employee providing a task with the public, you don't have to wear it in your vehicle, but when you go into that person's home, you'd want to protect yourself as well as protect that public, you know, that person that you're interacting with, because you potentially could be an asymptomatic carrier as, you know, as a service worker.
I think I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Jeff.
I just thought that that was something that we could add to our things as ending in, you know, April 29th, maybe something to add to that list of people on that list. That's all.
For local inspectors who are.
Just
well,
for.
Well, actually, you're not an inspector for.
Service people going in.
Service people, okay.
Add that
But I think it's already in there.
Is it?
Yeah
it says all employees of essential businesses shall wear a face covering over their mouth and nose when interacting with the public. So when you're interacting with the public, that's your trigger to go ahead, because you're not going in by yourself, right? You have to have someone from the public letting you in and accessing that property.
Right. Right.
Okay. Anyone?
I actually had one question about regarding the sale of groceries at food establishments. Kathleen, would this extend to paper products as well as food products?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Tim, what I'd prefer to do is actually come up in to the chair, if this is okay, come up with a list of items that I think are appropriate. And then if the food establishment, the food establishment who's doing this says, you know, I'd like to, you know, sell, you know, macaroni or pasta, you know, we can, it kind of would be a living, breathing document, but we'd have the baseline products. you know, of what they should carry. I mean, it is temporary, you know, so I wouldn't have them carrying, you know, any potentially hazard foods or things like that. Just pretty much, you know, pantry items.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So is there, does anyone want to make a motion for that, allowing of restaurants to carry grocery items or pantry items?
I make a motion.
All right. I'll entertain it.
Second.
All right. You have to define it. One of you, I can't do it as a chair.
So second the motion to allow food establishments in the town of Franklin to carry and sell grocery items to be approved by the health director of the town.
Okay, so I'm going to do a roll call vote. Jeff?
In favor.
Tim?
Favor.
Bridget Sweet, in favor. All in favor. Okay, so... So I see in the chat here, there are some additional questions. The governor allowing non-contact recreation, keeping social distancing in groups under 10 for parks and recreational fields. Can golf and Franklin continue under all the same safety protocols the governor lists for park and recreational fields? This would be considered new business. It's not on our agenda, so we can't discuss this in theory tonight. We will be having another meeting next week. I understand the concerns from the golf component. I actually did reach out to the state, our local liaison, Ron O'Connor, today for additional guidance, because as of now, under the state purview, golf is not considered essential. So for us, in order to consider that, there has to be some additional feedback from the governor's office as to how that may have changed. So we can't discuss in full tonight because it's not on the agenda, but Kathleen, we're gonna have another meeting next week, right? So we
yes.
The first agenda item for next week's meeting.
Sure.
And then as well, sort of the mask follow-up so far.
Okay. All right.
So with that being said, I know I hate to be the bearer of bad news as far as that. I mean, my kids want to go outside and play too. What else? I think that's it on our agenda, right, Kathleen?
Yeah, there were only two items, yeah.
Okay. So with that being said, if there's no other comments from the public, I'd like to entertain a motion to adjourn.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Is there a second? All right, so roll call vote. Jeff Harris?
In favor.
Tim?
In favor.
Bridget Sweet, in favor as well. So at this point at 5:53, our meeting on April 27th is adjourned for the Board of Health. Thank you all.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.